Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Secret Invasion. I'm Alex.
It's becoming less of a secret. I'm Justin.
And we are going to be talking about the second episode of the series, Promises. So if you haven't watched it, spoilers after this point. We're going to get into it. We're going to talk about the big things. But I want to talk about one bigger thing first. Now, off of the first episode, we spent a lot of time talking about the death of Maria Hill, whether they're fridging her. First of all, in this episode, I think, yes, they were.
I think she dead.
Yeah, I think she dead. I also, obviously, she can come back and we can talk about that a little bit. But I was very surprised because the bigger reaction was to the credits to the show, which were confirmed to be AI generated, and people lost their minds.
Yeah.
Just lost them. Now that you know that they are AI generated, what are your thoughts on them? And what are your thoughts on the whole conversation that has happened around the credits over the past week or so?
I mean, I think it's a big mistake, a big Marvel mistake for multiple reasons. Just like, why do that? And I think they were sort of making the case like, well, it's a metaphor for Skrulls. And I was like, nah, I don't think so. That doesn't quite hold. Mm-hmm. And like, they could have easily, there's a million ways they could have gone with this. And I'm curious what the actual decision was. Was it just a bad creative choice, or more likely was it like, we haven't done the credits yet. What should we do? Let's just AI generate it. Someone on the staff was like, oh, this is cool. And then they didn't realize that it's actually not cool, especially with the writer's strike happening. AI is a huge part of that. To have this come out at peak volatility about AI generated art, I feel like was just a misstep. And, you know, they could have easily made a different creative choice that would have been way better.
Totally agree. I mean, AI is theft, is essentially what it is. Like, it's using other people's art to generate your art. I have to assume, since it's Disney, probably they cleared whatever art they were generating this off of. But if they didn't, that's an even bigger mistake, potentially. But like you're saying, it's a very volatile subject. They should have thought about this a little bit more. And I think, frankly, I'm going to say something very negative up front here, though generally I think I like this episode better than the first episode.
Yeah.
There's not enough thought going into a lot of aspects of this show right now, which is frustrating for me. Something that we've talked a little bit about on our Patreon Slack is a lot of the show, there could be spurs. Like, they could pull the rug out in the last episode and be like, everything you thought was stupid, this is why it happened, you're wrong, Nick Fury has been in front of everything the entire time, because that's how the spy genre works, and that's fine, and that 100% could happen. But I think that extends to the Maria Hill thing, where in this episode, there, and I could not believe I was watching the scene, at Maria Hill's funeral, her mom is like, you were the one that got her killed, right? Well, you make it worth it, Nick Fury. You go out there. And I was like, what is, this is a scene that should not have existed past 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Like, there's no reason to do that scene. That is straight up the definition of fridging on TV tropes or whatever page you want to go to. It was a real bummer.
Well, and like, not even beyond that, I was just like, this scene is, no person would say that to at their daughter's funeral. I was like, this scene is just like, it's so written. It's so like, let's make sure the plot moves forward with a complete misunderstanding of what characters or humans or Skrulls or a person and with a soul would do. So like, it's just like a misstep in a lot of ways.
It also extends to, and I do want to mention one of the things that I really liked about the episode in a second, just to counterbalance all this so it doesn't feel too complainy, but it also extends to like how they're treating the Skrull rebellion here, which feels inconsistent based on how much they can spend on the special effects more than anything else, which I understand that is a constraint. But things like, you get that scene where Gravik goes to the Skrull Council, which is a bunch of world leaders and a newscaster and some other folks are there. And his whole thing to them is like, we got to be our authentic Skrull selves. We got to go out there. We got to show everybody that we're Skrulls. We got to stop living in hiding. Or alternately, we see new Skrullos, same sort of thing. They're like, this is a place where everybody can be their authentic selves. But the large majority of Skrulls in new Skrulls are not looking like Skrulls. They're looking like humans. Or when he goes to the Skrull Council, same thing. He's not being himself as a Skrull. He's still being himself as a human. And it's mixing up and confusing the metaphor they're going for. I know we disagreed about this a little in the last episode. I like the essential idea here of we have lived in hiding. We are a population of, as we find out this episode, a million Skrulls possibly living
crazy
here.
Crazy reveal also.
Crazy reveal, but that really points to this whole refugee status, being a state without an actual homeland, that ties into a lot of different countries and issues. I mean, my mind certainly goes to Israel and Palestine because I'm Jewish, and a lot of conversation in my entire life has happened around that. But there's a lot of other states and places that have dealt with this sort of thing. So that is a powerful, fruitful place to put a metaphor, but they're being non-specific about it is the thing that's frustrating me so far.
Well, and my issue with it, because I agree, that's definitely what's at play here, but I don't think the show can handle it. The show, like you're saying, the show isn't doing a good job of proving, like, we can handle these larger ideas. That's why I was saying, like, it would be better for me if this show was sort of purely focused on the, like, invasion of the body snatchers type storyline, where it's like, wait, the paranoia, who is who, how is this mixed up? And instead, it's going into these larger ideas where the scale has to be so much bigger, with, like, million Skrulls, refugee camps, new society. You promised us this, and then you were blipped, and so we don't have it. It's not really Nick Fury's fault that he was blipped, but in that time, they sort of became, like, upset, or you could say radicalized, that, like, we are owed this, and it's not happening, and now we're in this place. It's just so much more complex and complicated, and the show doesn't have the, seems so far anyway, the creative engine to drive through that in a good narrative.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some positive things, though. I will throw out there, as with the first episode, my absolute favorite thing about the show so far is Olivia Colman. Her whole scene torturing the Skrull, asking at the beginning, like, real quick, where's the escape route? No particular reason. And then, of course, you know, she's going to use that by the end. She's the only one doing Nick Fury stuff on the Nick Fury show at this point.
Yeah, it's true.
Whenever she is on screen, there's just this, I don't know if you felt this too, but I feel like there's this pop of energy that comes out of the show where everything is zippier, it's more fun, it's trickier, exactly what you want from a spy show, and everything slows down like 10 to 15% every other time when she's not on screen.
Yeah, and she's also just a great villain. She's like bad. She's getting into like some like race stuff and like xenophobia here, and just like being the horrifying torture scene. Like, she is committing to the villain here. So in it, not to say I like what she's saying, but she's just like, you need a big,
she has some interesting ideas. Yeah.
She has some, you've been anti-Skrull for a long time. Okay, yeah. She has like these huge ideas, and she's the character that is definitely the gravitational center of the show.
Well, and I do think the idea here that we talked about in the last episode is that Nick Fury, like everybody told him a million times in episode one, is off his game. So he is not quite ultimate Nick Fury. No pun intended, I guess. I don't know, or reference intended.
I mean, well, I think that's sort of the right reference. He is ultimate Nick Fury.
Yes.
In the comic books.
Yeah, exactly. But he's like, he's not at the peak of his powers. Olivia Colman absolutely is. So she's able to do all the spy stuff while he can't. But we want to see him do that. You know, we want to, like, in the Wolverine Old Man Logan terms, we want to see him pop his claws. But there's a tension there in terms of Wolverine being like, I suffered this tragedy and I'm never going to use my claws again. And you're like, you're going to use your claws again. We're going to see it happen. Come on, come on, come on, do it. And because it's this violence that comes out with Nick Fury being like, oopsie daisy, I'm a bad spy. That's not as much fun to watch. The tension is not there. It's frustration because you, the viewer, are ahead of it.
Well, yes. And also, like, we have Gravik, who's a bad guy, Colman, who is a bad guy, on opposite sides here. So that leaves Nick Fury being like, guys, guys, calm down. And, like, that's not an action you want your hero doing. Like, guys, guys, let's not do it. Exciting, scary things. Let's just chill. And it's like, he needs to be, and we should talk about sort of where we end here, because I feel like something bad's going to happen to his stabilized life that will push him into becoming an even more intense force to fight these larger forces, as opposed to just trying to sort of chill them out.
So, well, let's talk about that ending, because I, like you're saying, I do think this ties into a lot of the issues of structure the show is happening. By the way, doesn't have an issue of performance. Everybody is still very good performers, and they're doing their best with the material they're given, but it does feel like the directing is a little limp, is the way that I describe it. Like, a lot of the...
There's so much... Sorry to interrupt you, but no, there's just so much... I agree with you. There's just so much going on, and there's so many people. There's, like, so many bodies. So a lot of the filming ends up being just, like, a bunch of people. And so you don't have a lot of opportunity to really, like, move the camera. I mean, you could, but it's just that hasn't been taken here. To move the camera in interesting ways, to, like, follow someone. It's just, like, a lot of, like, bigger scenes of people being like, huh, here's what I think, here's what I think. And so it ends up being just like that.
I think that plays out, and I really will get to the ending in a second, but I think that plays out in the Rhodey Fury conversation in the restaurant. Don Cheadle, great actor. Samuel Jackson, great actor. It's just shot, reverse shot the entire time. Like, that's it in terms of the conversation. There's nothing interesting going on in terms of the camera work. The dialogue is also fine in terms of their back and forth, but it's the sort of thing that really could be helped with, I don't know, like a more Bourne shooting style or Soderbergh or something like that. Instead of it just feels like, well, we've got about an hour to use this restaurant. You guys say your lines. We got these two cameras set up. Let's go. And that's really all that I got from there. And it's frustrating because I want more out of it. I want to feel the tension of this Rhodey in a mode that we have never seen him before, being the attack dog for the president, firing Nick Fury. I should feel something watching that scene, caring about these characters, and I don't quite. And I chalk that up to the way that they're shooting the show. I do chalk that up to the dialogue a little bit, not quite hitting as hard as it could. But to get back to the last scene, so we get this reveal that Nick Fury is married to a Skrull. Like, his wife is a Skrull. This, again, has that inconsistent thing of, like, she's a Skrull and then she turns back to human when he comes in. He knows she's a Skrull because she's in the first scene, in the episode. So it isn't like she's hiding it from him or anything like that. But it does feel like, let's throw a theory out at you, I feel like the show was written for the twists, which is not necessarily the way you should be writing a TV show. Like, they're aiming for, okay, we got these six big moments that are going to happen at the end of our episodes. Let's structure towards those. Instead, you need to think about what you're saying about the character and what you're doing, and then leave people on the cliffhanger.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And, like, I like this as a moment, as, like, a maybe the reason someone's going to tell him, you're not too old to do this job. You've always been old. You're soft because you're settled into this life and you need to be out there doing the work. And that's a bigger indictment, I think, of him, and, like, something that puts him in a tough spot as a character, which I think is good for Nick Fury. And hopefully we can, in the next episode, actually get inside his head and sort of deal with these things, putting him at the center of the show, which I think we just haven't seen yet.
Well, let me throw out a little bit of theory to you in that. So first, after we get the trailer for Captain Marvel, very weird thing to do at the beginning of the second episode, we kick into the timeline directly after that, when Nick Fury promises that he's going to help the Skrulls find a new home planet. That is going to be his main goal. Obviously, that is his original sin. He and Talos don't do it, which kicks off the action here. But that, I believe, the Skrull that he is married to at the end is comforting Gravik when Gravik gets introduced. So it's entirely possible, part of the information we haven't been told yet, is Gravik was essentially Nick Fury's son, like, raised by this woman and by him, and that's where all this anger is coming to. I think they're saving that for a reveal in episode 3 or 4, when that feels flashback, like, the sort of information, if you put up front, makes the whole thing more powerful. Like, you understand why this is happening and why this means so much to these characters, rather than slowly unfurling it.
Yeah, I agree with you, because then Gravik has meaning from the jump, as opposed to just, this guy seems like a bad guy, I don't know what the deal is. Mm-hmm. He seems mad. If we know why he's mad at first, it just gives him, then it's like people crashing into each other, as opposed to ideas that we don't understand, and then finally it's revealed later. And I think that's just the problem with a lot of television shows, and specifically Marvel television shows, where it's a little coy with information and doesn't trust that we don't need, you know, to be continueds. We just need great, interesting storytelling from the beginning.
Well, let me throw something else out at you. This ties into the big plot slash Easter eggy section of the episode. So we find out that Kravik has been building this machine beyond his brain copying machine, where he is doing something with it. We're not told exactly what it is, but Emilia Clarke looks into it, and we get to see a bunch of Easter eggs of things that have been sort of like detritus from villains left throughout the Marvel universe, and heroes, because they mention Groot in there. They mention Cull Obsidian, I think.
Cull Obsidian, yep.
Yeah. They also mention Extremis, and there's like a Frost Giant or something like that. But whatever it is, I think my guess is that they are harvesting these different things and have figured out a way to give Skrulls those abilities. This is specifically based on, there's a shot of the trailer of Kravik doing something with his arm that people are like, oh, he has super Skrull powers. Maybe, but I think the way that they're doing it is he actually has Groot powers, because if you look at it, it looks like his arm is Groot's arm, the way that Groot extends his arm. So I think Skrulls are shape changers. They're going to use these things that were left over in the Marvel Universe. And I do think, if that's the direction they're going in, again, a strong use of the theme of these are the people that have been left behind, these Skrulls from the Marvel Universe. Nick Fury hasn't picked them up. All these other things, oops, you forgot about Cull Obsidian's arm from Avengers Infinity War. Should have done something about that, guys, instead of leaving that around, and all this stuff is going to come back to haunt them. I like that idea, potentially. But I don't know, same sort of thing like we've been talking about. I wonder if it wouldn't have been stronger rather than building up to like, and here's our big costume reveal, here's our big villain reveal, like they do in a lot of these Marvel shows, if they started there. If instead you had like, instead of these random explosions, you had, oh my God, there's super Skrull attacks happening all over the place. Where did they get these powers? What is going on here? Why are they doing this? And then Nick Fury has to piece all of that together. In my mind, not to write it, but that's a stronger show.
Or even something that I think Marvel likes to do with a lot of the things is start with someone getting that arm, or start with like piecing together the detritus and them being like, this is all we have. What can we do? We're out of ideas, the Skrulls. So like then you're at least setting the stage for this at the beginning and giving us that tease of like, you're going to see some cool superpowered shit later.
Well, and presumably, this is very getting far afield and theorizing, but presumably it's a similar thing to Fury holding on to the Hydra weapons that we found out about in Avengers, the movie. Avengers, the movie. That's
Avengers, the movie. Yeah, that's the title.
Anyway, but he's probably doing the same sort of thing where he's been collecting all of these things and put them in a warehouse, Indiana Jones style, and ignored them. And that ties into the whole thing of all of these are sins of Nick Fury's past revisiting him. But I don't know, there's a different, it just feels like they're not spooling out information at the right pace in the right way in the show.
Yeah. And that's something that could change, like to be positive. Like, I think maybe the third episode is when it's like, all right, this is the one where we have enough on the table that we can just sort of start showing things. And then the action, the cliffhangers at the end of the episode can be about forward movement rather than a retroactive reveal. And hopefully that's what we're going to get to. But honestly, like, we're talking about giving them these Skrull powers based on other aspects of the Marvel Universe is a smart way to get around not having to bring back a ton of actors and have them be Skrulls. So the Skrulls, it's less about them taking identities and more about them just having powers that we recognize, which is cool. It's the less interesting version of a Secret Invasion show for me, but I'm still here to ride with it.
I agree with you on that. Like, I think, to be clear, we are both rooting for the show. We wanted to like the show going in, haven't loved these first two episodes, but wanted to turn around and be fully on board if it does. But I am missing, beyond the Olivia Colman scenes, which I've already said I loved, I think my favorite scene, the scene that I keep thinking about whenever I think about it, which isn't very often, to be honest, but for the first episode, the one of Fury walking through Moscow at night and being like, is that person a Skrull? Is that person a Skrull? Is that little girl with a ball a Skrull? What's going on here? That had the most tension and the most interesting stuff to me. And I think this is what you've been saying. I just want to see more of that. I want to see more of like them freaking out whether a person is a Skrull or not. And we're not really getting that. Or if we do get that, like the scene with the art dealer in the first episode, you kind of know it in advance. Like, you know, like you've already been given the information of, yeah, that guy's a Skrull. So they just need to catch up with you.
Yeah, because it's sort of a misuse. The Skrulls, their whole thing is there. It's a seamless disguise. They're in places. And instead, they're just being treated like any sort of alien race that's on Earth, where it's like, well, these people are mad. Let's deal with it.
Any other notes you want to call out here? Any other thoughts or scenes from the episode?
Shouts to Shooter McGavin, who's in here offering the false flag information. I'm sure if Pete were here, he would be saying these words that are coming out of my mouth. And the finger getting cut off was cool, that moment in the torture scene. I like seeing Rhodey, a character that, you know, of all the characters from the early phases of the Marvel Universe, we get to see more of. I hope we get more better work from him.
He's a Skrull, though, right?
I mean, probably. I feel like any celeb we get in this show, if they're not revealing them to be a Skrull, then they've missed an opportunity. Right.
But I think that's going to be like, Rhodey is so tough on Fury here. He also has the ear of the president. That to me is a very obvious, like, whoa, I'm in the Skrull brain machine and I'd never do that to you, Nick Fury. I'm a hero, that we get in episode 4 or 5 or something like that, which makes Fury's firing invalid. This is true. I talked to some great people point. In my company about this, because there was a guy who got fired and it turned out it was by a Skrull and it didn't stick.
It's great. Always ask if you're being walked out, fired from your job. Are you a Skrull?
Yeah. And they legally have to tell you.
They have to say yes. Yeah, yes, exactly. It's like the classic cop rule that's also a lie.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was a short one, but I think that's probably pretty much all we have to say about this show at the current time.
We've covered it.
It's a little unfortunate. I like talking about these Marvel shows and I want to have more to say about it. There's just not that much to plumb into yet, unfortunately.
And I think there will be. It is, you know, there's a lot of just table setting that has to happen, because it's a lot of characters we haven't seen in a while. We have to be reminded of them. We have to introduce all of this Skrull stuff that we don't know anything about. So certainly there are better, as we've criticized, or better ways to do that, but hopefully they've done it. And in the third episode, we can really get going from a story point of view.
There you go. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Marvel stuff. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Another great hack at work is to say that you were blipped if you didn't get your assignment.
Oh, yeah. I've done that too many times.
Yeah. Short blip. It was like a two-day blip.
Whoop. Oh, sorry.